everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
I'm Dane, the... It's just allergies, I swear. Head.
Gross. Get behind the sealed door. Like in the movie.
You need the sneeze guard.
From the title, or a number of movies, I guess. But the title of the episode is Contagion. I think of Outbreak as the... Like, that's my touchstone for a...
For a pandemic movie?
Yeah, for a, you know, a scary virus thing. And also the Psych episode that spoofed Outbreak and Contagion and all them. But if I had just watched that, honestly, that'd be enough. Probably. Because that's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games where we discuss our favorite hobbies, share our thoughts with you, and play some games sometimes. Sicko, what are you talking about today? What are we talking about
in a world
today, you sicko?
In a world where it's sick. I didn't have anything for this. Sicko Zone 3, The Contagion, coming this summer. Yeah, so we're talking about Sicko Zone again for the trace time.
Trace times.
So it's teaching us how to pay attention to how we're telling stories, or it taught us how to pay attention.
Before you do signposting, should I maybe remind listeners what Sicko Zone is?
Yeah, sure. What is Sicko Zone?
Okay. So Sicko Zone is what we call a thing that we do where, when we've got the itch, and that weekly session, if we're lucky... still isn't enough to, you know, satiate the role-playing hunger. We call it the Sicko Zone, where we play adventures over text on a Discord server. Usually they're solo one-on-one, but we've done some others with friends, some guests of the channel who you would know. Basically, it lets you play role-playing games all the time. And not all the time, because, you know, it's on and off, and it's, you know, when you got a spare moment, but when you got the spare moment, you can drop into some role-playing, and you can, you know, narrate the next scene, or if you're a player,
and
you
it
can...
gives you something to think about.
Yeah, describe what you do next, and think about that in-between, you know, in the back of your head while you're doing something that's maybe not as fun, like your fucking job.
Your job.
And we've talked about the Sicko Zone stuff before, but Sicko Zone continues, and as it continues, we've thought more about it, and ideas have evolved and new ideas have come up. So yeah, as long as Sicko Zone is a thing, and as long as it we don't accidentally perfect it and not want to do it anymore, then we'll probably keep having stuff about Sicko Zone to talk about.
Indeed, yes. And this one's going to be less about, like, how to do something like Sicko Zone.
Yeah.
And more of just, like,
check out the
some
other
things
two.
We've been thinking about.
Check out the other two. We talk about, you know, what it is and how to set it up and the tools which you, you know, have on your phone to do something like this. This is a more cerebral and high-minded discussion about Sicko Zone.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about telling a good story and then trading messages as a way to tell a good story. And, like, just that one's actually more about Sicko Zone.
Yeah, that's
and
the
then
tips and tricks sort of space.
Outside of Sicko Zone and, like, what the things that we've learned from Sicko Zone, how to apply them in a wider world, how to spread the contagion, essentially.
Yep.
That's where the title comes from. Ha, 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 ha. So, telling a good story. Right, kind of comes down to, like, what is role-playing? In today's parlance, it's telling a good story is, like, the goal of role-playing. And, like, this kind of has come from one of our patrons, and we're more about our Patreon later, shared this little clip with me. Deborah Ann Wohl, who is an actor.
An actor!
Actress, whatever.
actress.
Actress was talking with her friend John Bernthal on John Bernthal's podcast and had a very succinct...
Oh, it's his show?
It is his show.
Yes. I've just seen the little clip. Mm-hmm. I don't know... Okay, so I believe, his show and he hangs out with people that he wants to talk to.
Yeah, and like I think she's been a recurring guest.
Because they know each other from...
Show.
Marvel show?
The
Walking Dead?
No, not Walking Dead. The Punisher, the...
Yeah, Punisher Daredevil, or Daredevil. He was in those ones. Yes. Yeah. The Netflix Marvel stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
The Netflix Marvel universe. Anyways, she had a great, just like succinct, you know, kind of explanation for John, who was not a role player, and was just kind of like, well, what is it?
Yeah.
And then kind of, you know, boiled it down really well and succinctly, I thought. And like her kind of deal was that D&D is just storytelling, and the point of it is to tell a good story. And like John was asking, like, oh, well, like, you know, why wouldn't you make your character like good at everything?
Really good at stuff, yeah.
Right.
It was a very pure sort of like TV moment. I know it's a podcast, but you know, you watch the clip
on YouTube
or TikTok.
Yeah.
It's a lot like the experience that I feel like almost everyone in this hobby, you know, had at some point where they're like, oh, you know, what's that? You see the book or you know, like some older kids are.
Right. And like, oh, you know, that's it, all it like, is?
What is it at first? Mm-hmm. And then, because it seems really cool, but it also seems kind of like mystical and inaccessible. Until someone is like, no, this is all it is. Mm-hmm. This is all it is.
And Deb takes John through a little scene through role playing, you know, really simple scene. And it's kind of like, it hit a lot of, or it hit my memory of like the first time that an older kid explained D&D to me in a very similar way, like on a bus. It was Eli. Remember Eli?
Yeah. And I remember the moment really clearly for me. It wasn't the same moment, but the like, that's all it is?
Yeah.
That's all it is just, you say what you do, and, you know, maybe there's some sort of dice mechanic to determine degree of success or whatever, but that's it? You just pretend?
Right? And it's like, yeah, you come to a hole, what do you do? It's like, okay, well, I don't know, do I have any rope? And it's like, well, yes, you actually do have rope. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to try to find the bottom of the hole. Oh, you don't have enough rope. It's like, okay, well, maybe I'll make a rope bridge. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Across the hole.
Right? Very, very simple, very easy. Because the point is to tell a good story. And, like, failure is an inherent part of that story. So, like, that's why you don't have maxed out stats and, like, are good at everything, right?
That's why game systems are, you know, you either roll randomly or you have a set amount of points to distribute. And it is limited in a way where you can't be good at everything. And then things about the fiction of your character will improve or degrade certain parts of it, because you want to be good at some things and bad at other things to support the fiction of who this guy is, and then bring that to telling a good story.
Right, and so like using that simple thing of telling a good story. Right? And then when you start to talk about stats and like roles and stuff, it's this philosophy is more of letting the stats shape the story. So like, you know, we've talked a lot in the recent episodes about like Mothership's little blurb that is very on point with this philosophy of like the stats aren't your character's whole deal, right? Mm-hmm. It's like how they deal under pressure, right? And so like, when do you call for a role? You don't call for a role for in simple things or things where there's no danger or uncertainty.
Yeah.
Right? You call for a role when you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And like, let's use the dice roll and your stats as like a prompt and be like, okay, well, I don't know, you attack the monster. Well, you miss the monster and the monster gets to attack you. And like, oh, well, maybe you get et. I don't know yet.
Get et up.
So kind of like the idea of telling a good story in role-playing, right, is letting the stats help you shape the story and not like shaping the story around the stats. Like, you know, the inverse would be, okay, to make a challenging encounter for these players, I know that they're really good at like magic. Mm-hmm. So somehow I'm gonna make like a monster that is resistant to magic, or, you know, they have high dexterity, so they're really hard to hit, right? So like I'm gonna make a monster that is also really hard to hit to challenge them or something like that, mm-hmm. right? And those are fine ways to play the game. Not saying they're not, but you should focus more on making a good story. What monster makes sense?
Yeah.
Fuck the stats.
Not just for the story that's being told, but like what you're talking about. Like a werewolf, it's hard to hurt a werewolf unless you have, you know, the proper tools, unless you're able to magically damage it, hit it with, you know, the silver weapons, magic weapons. So, you know, you're like, this party's pretty good. They've handled most stuff. But now I'm going to put a werewolf in their path, and just hitting it and dealing damage is going to work. They're going to have to, you know, maybe fall back. Think of a different way to solve this thing, because they don't have the good tools for it yet, even though they've handled other combat encounters easily up until this point.
And I think that is so easily lost in today's, or in role-playing in general sometimes, because, like, oh yeah, the werewolf, it's really hard to like actually hurt it, and like it would make sense if we fell back. It would, like, that would be the smart thing to do. Mm-hmm. But we're players and we're here for a good time, not a long time or whatever. So we're going to just keep going at this werewolf and like letting it grind ourselves against the wheel or whatever, because we're too pig-headed, you know, and stubborn to be like, you know what? Let's come back when we have more.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that's kind of something that you should learn, and we'll put it on the board. Telling a good story is maybe not the only point of role-playing, but a very good one, and especially, you know, now with plethora of systems, right, to choose from.
We are spoiled for options of how to engage with this hobby right now, and just like between the two of us, we've got a bunch of books. We're never going to play campaigns in all of these, right? We might someday, you know, have played a one shot in all of them, at least to like give them a try, but maybe not even then, because we also might continue to buy more stuff, because an RPG system is also like a, you know, a cool product and a work of art usually. So, you know, sometimes you buy them with no intention really of playing them, just because they're cool to have. And they might serve any number of,
right, they might, you know, give you an idea of something to do. They might give you some idea of some cool mechanics to help you tell your story. So if you're approaching role playing with the purpose of telling a good story, there's some things Sickle Zone can teach you.
Yeah.
Like trading messages. As a text adventure, that is all you can really do with Sickle Zone. So it's a little bit different, right? But, like, you know, think about it. When you're role-playing in person even, right? You're trading messages. GM is describing the scene the best they can. The players are trying to picture it, and then, you know, responding, reacting, changing the story, right? And then, you know, that's feedback to the game master, who takes that message, internalizes it, changes whatever needs to be changed, or, you know, reveals something new.
You're just in over text, in like the asynchronous playing over Discord, the way we've done the Sicko Zone. All that is, the only, I think, mechanical difference between that and sitting at a table with people is there is a delay.
Yeah.
There's a delay. That's all.
But it's the same thing when it comes down to, like, exactly. Like,
yeah, to what base communication level is.
Yeah.
And at the table, you're doing the same thing. You're trading messages. You just have, you know, in sci-fi terms, you've got no light delay.
Right.
But Sicko Zone, you're further away, you're doing other stuff, so there's just delay between things, that's all.
Right, so it's game mastering in Sicko Zone has taught me a lot, or helped me practice, like, actually getting, like, what needs to be expressed, like, across, and, like, setting the scene, and being able to set the scene in a way that there are, like, there's less confusion and less follow-up questions, right? Because, unfortunately, we do not have the technology to plug my brain into the projector and have that imagery displayed.
To project a scene.
So you got to use your words. Right? So this most recent iteration of our most recent kind of adventure in Sicko Zone, I've been game mastering, and, you know, this is kind of where all this thoughts coalesced and became something we could talk about. I've been trying to adhere to the, like, choose your own adventure model, where instead of, like, in a in-person role-playing session where, like, I describe the scene and then kind of let you explore it a little bit, like, let the players explore it a little bit and ask follow-up questions and be like, okay, well, what do I see to the west? Okay, you know, what's the weather like? All those things are going to help me make a decision of what I'm going to do next. But, like, when you're in Sicko Zone, that could be 4 days of playing.
Yeah.
Those three questions.
Right. It could be an exchange of just, like, I only had this amount of time over a couple of work days to, you know, to say my one answer and then to ask a follow-up question. Mm-hmm. And that's just how spread out it sometimes gets.
Right. So the, like, choose your own adventure, you know, sets the scene, and then, like, here are your options. Like, you know, turn to page 43 or turn to page 69.
Nice.
But in a role-playing game, it's just basically, like, here is the scene. What do you do next? What direction do you go? I'm not, like, allowing the player to be like, well, you know what? I go a third direction.
Yeah.
You know, it's a binary choice, or, you know, a triary choice. Maybe there's three options.
But there's a couple of doors, right? Like, you present however many, and maybe it is two options. You don't want to give one, though. Because if there's only one, then just,
why,
like,
are you asking?
Narrate past that one until there's two or three.
Exactly.
Or four, or whatever. But, yeah, you narrate up until where there is a where there is a branch, or where there is something that requires, you know, a character to interact by rolling, by attempting some sort of action. You either narrate to a branching path or to an obstacle.
Exactly. So how do you think that's been going? And I know we've kind of stalled out recently. But
we just had a long weekend and came back to work. But I have been thinking about what I'm going to do next.
But just, like, in general, from the start of it, like, do you think, one, that I've been accomplishing that goal? Have I gotten better at it? What's your thoughts as a player?
I feel like it's been going pretty dang good. At first, just because it was, like, you know, kind of, for everyone else's situational awareness, it's kind of a classic fantasy thing. And there's some, you know, evil on the rise, and our characters were responsible somewhat for at least looking into it, right? And at first, with not very much context, it was just kind of like, well, we do the thing that's, you know, right in front of us. But then we got some options, and it felt like we, you know, where I am now, it does feel like I've closed some stuff off that could have branched out to be just as big as where I am right now. And I'm enjoying that. And I'm also, because of the delay, I feel like you're really dialing in that, like, you narrate up to
the decision point.
A decision point where, like, the, you know, you text a paragraph, mm-hmm. or a couple paragraphs, whatever, and I have the context that I need. Oh, these other characters, they said this and they did this, and now we are here. And door A, door B, door C are open to you this way. And then I get to do the role playing, and that's kind of the thing with Sicko Zone, is the role playing is still, like, you know, in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing the role playing while I'm doing my job, and then when I get a second to sit in my truck for, mm-hmm. you know, a couple of minutes, then I take what I've been doing and I type that out, I craft that, and then I send that back to you, which is, you know, your prompt. Narrating up to an obstacle or decision point has been working pretty well for that, I think. And I think we've dialed it in.
Mm-hmm.
This version that you're running, I think, is a lot better than when we started straight up running D&D across text, even though that worked fine. And, you know, maybe we weren't even that much worse of game masters back then, but specifically to communicate information and to structure the experience over asynchronous text play, that feels like we're dialing that in.
Mm-hmm. So the other big thing I've been trying to do this time around is foregoing, like, the concept of health, mm-hmm. right? Like, back when we started with D&D, you know, D&D has your hit points.
We were rolling damage dice and hit points, mm-hmm. and obeying the things that are class.
Right, and, like, you know, monsters have hit points, and, mm-hmm. like, oh, you got to hit them, and then you got to do damage, and then you probably got to hit them again, you know, and all those things. In a text adventure,
that's not
those
fun.
Those are all rolls.
Yeah.
Which means it could be 3 hours before you find out that you hit and then roll damage and then another.
Yeah.
Right? You know, in the purpose of telling a good story, you can, if an attack is successful, just kill the monster. And,
yeah.
like, maybe it's not a single blow that kills the monster.
Right.
But, like, you succeeded in attacking and killing the
yeah,
monster.
Yeah, you narrate a few steps
back and forth,
passes of
right,
a sword
yeah.
fight, and it ends with, like, I killed
victory,
that guy.
Right, because you succeeded in your attack.
Yeah. Reducing a combat encounter to a single roll and foregoing the concept of health. Like, mm-hmm. I'm either going to die or I'm going to get, like, you know, knocked out and taken prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the stakes. Unless you tell me the stakes are life and death in this
yeah.
moment, I'm probably not going to die when I fail a defense
right.
action.
And, like, taking some wounds is just part of the story. It's
yeah.
like, oh, like, now I'm poisoned mm-hmm. and that sucks.
Maybe some mechanical... You know, penalties come from that, but the main thing
yeah.
is that, like, my character is wounded,
mm-hmm.
so my character is going to behave. When I narrate
right.
to you back in my, you know, response paragraph, I'm going to narrate my actions as if I'm, you know, I just took a wound and I'm trying to avoid getting wounded again. Maybe I'm not trying to kill the guy anymore. Maybe
mm-hmm.
I'm trying to, you know, make space or disrupt in some way because I don't want to get hit again.
Yeah.
Not necessarily like, okay, you hit me
mm-hmm.
and I took 4 damage and so my hit points are now 8.
Mm-hmm.
But story-wise, that means nothing. And so I swing my sword back. That's not fun to text.
And, like, you know, we are in a privileged spot because we've been playing together for a long time and you know we've been doing this podcast for a long time, and I think you know, forgoing the concept of health takes a lot of trust between
yeah.
the game master and player, right? Because the health points are, like, you know, an indication of, you know, how close your character is to death.
Yeah.
And
how
not,
careful do I need to be?
Not knowing that exact number can be a little, like, frightening sometimes. It's like, oh shit. Like, you know, I did just take a wound because I missed my dodge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I miss again, will I die? I don't know that because I don't have my health in front of me.
Right.
Right? So, like, you kind of just have to trust that the game master is going to tell a good story.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, dying here, probably not a good story. Like, I know yeah. when it's life or death.
Yeah.
Right?
And that is something, I do believe we talked about that in one of the older Sicko Zone mm-hmm. episodes. That is a concept that we kind of happened upon back, because when we were playing D&D and I was running for you, as I was running your level one barbarian character, and you lost your first fight because of just some whiffed
big time
dodge rolls, right? Well,
and there was a crit.
It's not fucking interesting yeah. for you mm-hmm. to just go into death saves
yeah.
on a text adventure, like text me your next death save.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you failed. He hits you, and because of the rules, you're fucking dead. But that's not how I played it, because that would have not been interesting. We happened upon this a while ago. I made him be knocked out and then, you know, wake up tied up at the edge of the lake, ready to be sacrificed to a monster. And then we start a new encounter from there. And yeah, because we've played a number of these, and I do trust, mm-hmm. but I think you're right. You said something true and wise about the way this is it takes a degree of trust between the player and the game master to accept that and like throw yourself on that mercy and be like, well, my character in this moment is going to fight as hard as they can, but knowing that, you know, if I get hit
mm-hmm.
the next hit, it might be like I lose the fight, but me lose the fight is not adventure over.
Mm-hmm.
It's in that sense, it's much more like reading a good fantasy novel.
Yeah.
Except, you know, we're doing it in real time.
Yeah.
Not real time. We're doing it on the go.
On the go. Yeah. And of course, it changes things, right? Because mainly we're talking about one-on-one, one player, one game master, right? So it changes things when you have multiple players. You can do like, okay, well, you're just out of this fight
mm-hmm.
because the other players are going to still have their turns and like, you know, probably yeah. still win the fight, but like you're done for now, and like, you know, another player can go revive you or whatever.
Having the multiple players too, I really enjoyed when we were doing that with three players and a game master doing a space Sicko Zone. But the delay that we talked about earlier is, yeah. You know, it's not just times three delay. It's like an order of magnitude delay, mm-hmm. and not all the time, but often enough where, you know, like Game Master can be unsure how to proceed. If like, well, they didn't yeah. really get their turn, mm-hmm. but.
Yeah, you know,
but it's been 8 hours and I'm ready to respond with something.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that goes back to the system that we're using, which doesn't count hit points and doesn't count damage. It just measures yeah. degrees of success, or not even degrees. It just measures success or failure in moments.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of it is narrative decision making and narration of action.
Yeah, and to widen that up, like the... So, like, the concept of health slowing down role-playing is not going to work for every system. Like, especially D&D is heavily reliant on health as, like, a balancing mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the looser systems, and, like, there's plenty of, like, one-page role-playing games and looser systems out there that I feel like some can just lose health entirely. The concept of health can just be thrown out with a game master and player group that trust each other and just, you know, I'm not going to worry about, oh, you did this much damage to the monster. The monster dies when it's time for the monster to die.
Yeah.
Right?
I played some, so I read the Tunnel Goon system a while ago, and then I modified it for a little solo thing experimentally. And we talked about solo RPGs a little while ago. But that has a health mechanic where... So you roll 2d6 plus your bonus against the difficulty of the monster and or the whatever, the situation. Mm-hmm. If it's a combat encounter with a bad guy or a monster, the difficulty goes from like 4, 6, 8, 10. And the difference, like how much you beat the number by, is the damage dealt. And the way I did it was just like, no. It's just success or failure. Mm. Do you hit a guy, or are they dead?
Yeah.
Because in solo gaming, it was similar to the way we do Sicko Zone, where like I was interested in feeling my way through this story and engaging with the procedural generation of it, and to bog down and be like, all right, well, I'm just going to sit in my work truck and roll six times for me, and then him, and me, and then him, and then, you know, what does the health do? That's not fucking interesting. Or fun, I feel like.
Right, yeah. It just becomes the boring.
Yeah. It's just like making tallies on a note card. And not really connected to anything. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I forewent. I kept the difficulty of it, but if like an easy bad guy is a 4, so 2d6 plus a bonus if I have one. If I beat their 4, I kill that easy bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a 10, I still kill him in one hit, but it's harder for me to get that 10. That was the way I messed with it and compromised it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, we can move outside of Sicko Zone, you know, back to that, you know, telling a good story. If it's just going to be like, you know, 6 rolls in a row for killing a monster, do you need those 6 rolls, right? Like, just, mm-hmm. you know, get it, you know, yes or no, and then, you know, move on.
Yeah.
Right? And if it's a no, then no and.
You get
right?
to do the cool thing to... which I really like, and pretty much everyone who's ever run D&D for me has done it this way. I like that you get to skip to it. When you get the last hit that reduces the monster to 0 hit points, and Dungeon Master's like, they roll, mm-hmm. and they see that, like, oh, reduces it to 0. How do you kill him? You know, you get to do that in Sicko Zone. Just, mm-hmm. like, describe how you win.
Yeah.
Type of thing. Without counting in between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think, you know, put it on the board. Never let stats stand in the way of the good story.
Mm-hmm.
Counting
numbers, those bastards.
And, you know, to be fair, good story, subjective.
Very.
Right. If you want something, you know, very gritty, and like you want to look at your health as more of a resource than like a you know, indication of how well your character is doing.
An aspect of the narrative, you want to actually count it and treat it like a...
Right, like Gloomhaven board game style, mm-hmm. where like every point counts because it means I can go another room.
Mm-hmm.
If that's your good story, then, you know, that's fine. We're not saying you have to forego like hit points.
No.
Or help.
But I would say, though, if that is the sort of thing that you want, then our concept of Sicko Zone, mm-hmm. as we've described it so far, is still probably not the right thing for that. You know, there's Game Boy Pokemon.
Yeah.
Is gonna... That's a version of that that you could still play in your pocket. You could still mm-hmm. play in your free time, you know, at work or whatever. I mean, I don't know who all still has a Game Boy, but...
It's all on the phone now, you can with get emulators.
Yeah, yeah. Get a phone emulator and, you know, get an old-school dungeon crawler, or get a Pokemon game. Those are going to satisfy that, mm-hmm. if that's the sort of thing. Or, you know, one of the old-school Final Fantasies or Dragon Quests, I'm sure you can find a way to play that on your phone now. And... if that's your version of a cool RPG, but then that also just doesn't require a game master, and that's outside of... I think what we're saying about Sicko Zone holds true, even though the concept of what is or is not a good story is a subjective thing, and if you do like certain mechanics, you don't have to cut them out.
Mm-hmm.
There are easier ways to get that fix than... you know, what we're talking about here, which is our experience with Sicko Zone, which has leaned more and more heavily into the narrative side of the role-playing experience at the... and foregone certain more crunchier aspects of the math that makes these games work.
Mm-hmm. And, like, I've kind of started to change the way I develop encounters because of that. In like, well, I guess technically I haven't, because the sicko zone that we're talking about is like, we were doing it 3 days ago. So I haven't actually been running, because you've been running the Dangerous Spaceman, Cosmos. So, but thinking about the upcoming 2HGM events and all that stuff, I've been thinking a lot about encounters and fights. And like, is this going to be a life or death fight? And like, if it's not, then that's going to change the encounter.
Yeah.
Right? If it's like, what is its purpose? And like, we have a whole thing, and maybe it's time to revisit. Like,
I think it might be encounter episode. I think it might be time to revisit that and maybe
expand,
just do a new version of it.
And just like, here's what we're thinking
based
now
on new things that we've learned and the way we game master now versus the way we game mastered 18 months ago.
Because like, if it's not going to be, if it's not meant to be a life or death like crucial moment, then there's like only like really two scenarios I work with. One is making players use their resources. So the next battle is a little bit harder, and then like, you know, that is the,
like, you're gonna win, but it's gonna cost you something
here. Right, it's the lead up to, there's going to be a crucial moment later. Right. And like, now you're going to have less resources than you had. Or the other one is to like give exposition, either, you know, set up the world a little bit more, like, you know, oh, you guys fought some giant spiders, and like, oh, that's weird for this time of year.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something you should think
what's,
about.
What's up with giant spiders in this neck of the woods right now?
At this time of year. Or like, you know, add the, like, yes, you are out in the wilderness and it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. And like, here's something that can happen. This time it's not that bad, but maybe next time it's going to be worse. Or, you know, oh, we just got betrayed and like the, I don't know, the side that we were on attacked us. So are we not on their side anymore? What's happened in the wider world that we now know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it could be a life or death, you know, like a mini boss where it's like, yeah, somebody might die here and that's going to be dramatic. And in that case, you know, I definitely think a lot harder about balance and how many hit points the like monster has. But I think about it in the way that like, how many hits is it going to take to kill this monster or get over this obstacle, rather than, you know, oh, I don't know, it's challenge level 4, so it has this many hit points.
Yeah.
And it might not pose a danger to players. It might just be an hour-long combat of them grueling, you know, grinding down this monster. Right.
It cost us in time.
Yeah. Because that's not, I feel like that's just not the way I want to tell the story. Is we're going to spend a pointless 2-hour fight just because everybody's rolling 1 on their damage dice.
Yeah. We haven't joked about that specific thing in a while, but that was, for a while, it came up a lot, and it was a memorable session of one of our early Torg adventures, where a snake fell out of a tree, and nobody could fucking hit this snake, and the snake just, like, persisted as a thing that, you know, it should have just been like, oh, it's scary to go through the jungle. You encountered a snake, right? But it turned into this,
right? Like, maybe it bites you and you get poisoned.
Bigger thing than it was supposed to be, because the rules of the game system, no one was winning this combat encounter.
Right, because of just the roles that they were rolling.
And since then, Sicko Zone's been pretty interesting, because it's been a sort of, you know, it's not the best version of the role-playing experience because of the delay and because of the, you know, the mode of communication. It is a really cool thing that we get to do when we want more. And it also has, it's kind of become emblematic of both of ours kind of philosophy about the role-playing thing, which has been to, like, not let stats or roles, to only do them when they're interesting and not let them stand in the way of something else interesting happening. The idea that, like, we have cool ideas that we want to put in front of our players and we want to see what interesting things they do to, you know, get past them.
Mm-hmm.
Or we want to see the interesting ways in which they fail and how that spirals off into something else. Narrative and story taking precedent over what the game system specifically mm-hmm. says, and taking precedent over game systems that are more driven by their stats and by the random number generation. We like the stories that, you know, we tell in this space collaboratively, and the stories that we come up with and then put in front of our players for them to interact with. We like that more than, you know, basically any clever game mechanic in any given system, right? And have, since we started, been kind of drifting towards, we want it to be a cool story.
Right, and like, we always, it's not like we didn't think that before.
No.
But like, saying it and like, practicing it slash like, actually doing it
yeah.
are two different Learning things, it. Right? You know, like, so saying the theory of like, yeah, never let stats get in the way. It takes a little practice.
Right, to say it as a mission statement,
mm-hmm.
easy enough, but then, you know, it takes expertise and mastery to a degree. It also takes buy-in, and what you were talking about earlier, it takes trust between, mm-hmm. and it, the easiest place to practice that is one-on-one,
yeah,
in a sicko.
Right, and it's not like we are professional role players and like the stuff that we do in person is like, you know, the game day where we're getting paid.
Yeah.
Right, we can still practice that stuff then, but like it's not as controlled,
mm-hmm.
right? As one-on-one, you really get to hone it in.
Yeah.
Right, because, you know, you get a try again quicker. That like feedback loop is a little faster, rather than, you know, with four players, you know, it's hard to stop and be like, well, what do you think about this player, right? Because, you know, you got three other players who are like, I don't give a shit, let's go.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, it's a great, it's just practice. It's just been practice. And a great, yeah, way to do that. So talking about the point of role playing, and like, we've kind of glossed over it and touched it and brushed up and tickled it. But if, like, your story that you're trying to tell is, like, to win, or your players want to win the game, right? Kind of all the stuff we were talking about is not going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You do need to pay attention to health points and challenge rating and everything like that. And something that we have said in the past and, like, kind of disparaged is like the idea of game masters versus player.
Yeah. Right?
Like that's a very old school idea.
Yeah, we don't like that very much.
But it exists and it can be fun.
It came up in that video when John Bernthal was kind of he was starting to like comprehend, oh, that's all it is, but mm-hmm. this is, you know, it's just pretend. You just play as somebody and occasionally you roll to determine uncertainties. And that's it. But then he asked, like, what's the point? Is the point to win? And Deborah Ann Woll was like, well, no. The point is not to win. I mean, there might be a thing that you're trying to win. There might be a thing that you're trying to accomplish. But the point of play is not to win. It's not a board game. It's the point is to experience the narrative. And I think, maybe at the inception of this hobby, that was maybe not true. There was competitive, like, dungeon crawling D&D at you know, tournament conventions and stuff, and you know, you're like, well, yeah, honor system, I played this module, so my character has this magic item.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would take that to just like anyone else's game and be like, yeah, I'm a level, you know, I'm a level 9 ranger and I got this cool thing. I don't know if rangers existed back then. Whatever. I'm not a D&D historian, but that idea of that it's something you can win and it's something you want to try to be good at, doesn't seem like that's the prevailing philosophy in the hobby space in general, and it certainly is not how we think of it.
I think it's also that if you try to half-ass that, it's bad, right? Like, if you want to do it that way, you really have to commit to doing it that way. And that makes a good story. But, like, you really have to try to punish your players. You really have to, like, really think about how you're going to fuck up your players. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, if your players aren't buying in, they feel attacked. And they're like, wait, what the fuck, man?
Right.
So,
if they're not bought into the idea that
dying is part of the good story.
Yeah, and the Game Master is kind of within the bounds of, like, challenge rating, doing their best to kill you, then there's a ton of problems with that experience, and probably a lot of like burnout and failure to return on the part of especially new players, I would imagine.
Which is why if you look at the board, you have to talk to your group.
Communicate.
You gotta communicate.
Say it all the time. It's like the main thing up there.
Fact is the only thing up there. In fact, it's actually not even up there.
It's not even up. Well, that's, you know, that's a whiteboard with some other stuff on it. Spoiler alerts to HGM fans. The board's not real.
Oh, no. You just made a lot of people question their existence. Yeah.
Well, actually, maybe it is. Listen, this isn't on me. This is on fucking you. I'm talking to the microphone. This is on fucking you. When we say put it on the board, we're talking about your board.
Put it on your board.
We're talking about your whiteboard in your office. We're talking about your journal of game mastering notes. You're supposed to write this stuff
down.
Your
notes about 2HGM. I hope you're taking them.
We already wrote it down. We wrote these stupid outlines, and the episode is still there for you to listen to. You're supposed to take your own notes the whole time. We didn't say that before.
But we meant
to. Yeah, but we meant to. And that has always been our intention.
Yeah. Closing thoughts on taking the lessons from Sicko Zone outside of Sicko Zone. Just think intentionally about what story you're trying to tell. If it's a grand adventure, you might want to play a little looser with health points and resources and actual strict rules to make sure that the adventure is adventurous.
Yeah.
Right? If you're playing a gritty survival story, probably going to focus on those things a little bit more. And like, if you're going to do that, our advice is really do that and don't pull punches. Don't accidentally break the game in one session because like you just like felt like giving the player, because like the player was advocating for it and they're like, well, I really want this kind of weapon that does this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I would say, you know, going against all our other advice throughout the 4 years that we've been doing this, say no, because it's supposed to be a gritty survival game, and like if it isn't really well thought out, you could have problems with it later, and then like it's hard to take that away from them. So think about the story you're telling.
Yeah.
And use all the skills we've been teaching you to tell that good story. Tell that story well.
Yeah.
Boom. We're edit that in post. We're cut out
yep.
the thing I missaid,
and we'll make it real smooth, and it'll sound like
I said it right the first time. Yep. Mm. Perfect.
All right. So it was a little rambly, but I think it was a lot of good stuff. So this recap. We started with the idea of telling a good story. What's the show? The Real Ones?
The Real One.
The Real One interview. Ones. Where, you know, that's all D&D is. Yeah, that's all a role-playing game is. And how it kind of boils down to the narrative experience, even though there is...
And you're going to fail, and like failure is part of a good story, and all of that.
Not letting that necessarily... Not planning for how that's going to run the story, but when it's appropriate, letting that, you know, shift the story one direction or the other. Telling a good story. We talked about the trading messages, the specific version of human interaction that is, you know, asynchronous text as a medium for pen and paper role-playing games, and how that has allowed what Dane specifically talked about, the lessons that he's been learning, and then I weighed in with how, as a player, it's been going for me, and the stuff that we've started to take from this experience, getting away from, you know, damage rolls and hit points, especially in favor of a more, you know, narrative-focused experience. Narrating up to the branch in the story, narrating up to a couple of different options, or up to an obstacle that has to be overcome one way or another. And then we talked about applying these lessons to outside of Sicko Zone specifically, and just the general kind of RPG philosophy that a lot of this has led to. It's meant to be fun. You got cool stories in your head. That's what we're trying to get out. We're trying to get those out of our head in a way where we experience them socially. So how best to achieve that? Yeah. And that the point's not really to win, it's to experience.
Indeed. I mean, that's going to do it for this episode of Two-Headed Game Master. If you like our stuff, there's more on our website.
Sure.
2hgm.com.
First thing you'll see is a cool little pop-up ad. Haven't seen those in a while since like the 90s, right? Just kidding. They're still around. And we got one. And it'll take you over to DriveThruRPG, where Afterlife, our original post-apocalyptic fantasy role-playing system and setting. It's a cool, kind of weird post-apocalyptic North America with, you know, monstrous species that you can play and a lot of cool character customization. And like a third of the book is fiction and adventure hooks that we came up with for this setting. Available in print and PDF. You buy the print, get the PDF for free. We did that on purpose. Give the PDF to your players so they can create their characters and get familiar. Use the print one to run your game. We've been doing it a lot. Pretty fun.
You can also join our Patreon.
Sure can.
If you do, you gain access to our Discord, where we interact with fans of the show. They get to ask us questions, be annoying a little bit.
We love it.
Love that. Also, they can participate in some of the things we do, like our Halloween special we do every year.
You want to be in the Halloween
Possibly
special?
Even be in? Are you telling me they can be in the Halloween special?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm making no promises to that, but I'll say there is absolutely zero chance you get to play in a Halloween spooktacular unless you join the Patreon and hit us up on the Discord and, you know, bring us your fun role-playing whatever's, thoughts, ideas, questions, whatever you got.
As the great one once said, you can't be a part of the role-playing if you're not on the Discord. That's exactly what Wayne Gretzky said.
Yep, and it's, he was holding a hockey stick, but He wasn't really talking about hockey. He was talking about this here right now. That's going to do it for this episode of Two-Headed Game Master. Thank you to the Burning Saviors for the use of the song Pond Hill is Finest as the intro and outro to our show. And we will see y'all on the next one.
See you on the next one.